Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show. It's a fine Thursday night in September. Fall weather's coming here fast. And the last time that we were on the air, we were not locked out.
This is true.
So this is the first Pens Nation radio show of the lockout era of the NHL. Certainly not the first time we've been through it. I'm Joe Depto, joined tonight by my co-host and compatriot in crime, Mr. Nick Richter. We got a fun show for everybody tonight. Going to be venting all of our pissed off lockout frustrations here on the air. We'll be hoping you do the same along with us. Hop on Twitter at the Pens Nation. You can tweet us to your heart's content and vent away. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Pens Nation panel member Mr. Ken Will and the always spectacular guest, Mr. Josh Yowie from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Nick, how you doing?
I wish I could say better, but I've been waking up way too early trying to watch these KHL games.
Have you been watching them? Because I'll be honest, I watch them, I catch glimpses of them, I read about them. You know, I'll get on Google Translate and translate the Russian, you know, pieces and read about them a little online. But it's just hard for me to really get up for these games. It just really is.
Well, actually, it's still kind of early. You know, these would basically be our preseason games. So maybe it's just because it's that time of the year. It's not really hockey season, but it kind of is. I mean, the guys are usually in camp, and you're talking about that at least. But it's really meaningless games in a way. But I guess it's hockey still, so it's something – to look forward to. It's something to watch. I'd watch the AHL and the ECHL right now if I could.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are, you know, I don't want to say pick up a one-year AHL fan club member card or anything like that, but I think some people will be paying attention to these, I don't want to say secondary leagues, but minor leagues, if you will, the AHL, the ECHL. I think people will probably follow what's going on in Sweden, what's going on in Finland and Switzerland, especially if a lot of these players continue to be locked out and forced to play in other leagues like that. But I think the AHL in general is going to be one of the more fun leagues to watch because not only do you have the fringe roster guys, the guys like, for example, in Pittsburgh, the Ben Lovejoys or Derek Engelins or Joe Vitale's, players like that, who will be playing down in Wilkes-Barre, you also have a lot of the junior talent, and you have a lot of the prospects coming up who are going to be playing in Wilkes-Barre. For example, Wilkes-Barre fans are going to be seeing former first-round pick Bo Bennett. They're going to be seeing one of the more recent first-round picks, yeah, Joe Morrow. They're going to be seeing these guys play on the same team against a lot of players who were in the NHL last year.
Yeah, and guys, I think one of the guys going under the radar in that group of draft picks and potential prospects is Kuhnhackl. I mean,
right.
No one's really talking about this guy, but he's a stud. He's kind of a gritty player, and he's got some scoring touch to him as well.
And guys like Kuhnhackl are the type of players that really the Pittsburgh Penguins need to properly develop because, let's face it, with all due respect to players like Eric Tangrady and guys like that, Bo Bennett really kind of is the, you know, he really does stand above the rest when you're taking a look at Pittsburgh Penguins forward prospects. And Kuhnhackl is a guy that really does fit their system well. And if he can come up and, you know, eventually play at a top six level, he doesn't need to be a big-time player. I mean, he just needs to be the kind of guy who creates space, isn't afraid to go to the net, and forechecks and backchecks responsibly within Dan Bylsma's system. Well, I mean, when you're playing next to Evgeny Malkin and James Neal, you don't need to be, you know, a guy like, I mean, look at Thomas Holmstrom or a player like that. He's been, you know, he was made a career at a riding shotgun to players who have more skill than he did. You know, it's not – there's just too much pressure on the guy.
All right, well, we are now joined by a guy, I believe, anyways, is an All-American, amazing, amazing American, Josh Joey from the troop. Josh, how's it going, man?
What an honor that introduction was. Oh, I like it.
You get your own WWE entrance music tonight.
I very much appreciate it, guys. How are we doing?
Doing well. How are you, Josh?
Oh, Andy, more importantly.
You know what? He's not doing too well tonight. He's feeling a little under the weather, and he's kind of laid up at home tonight. So,
yeah, he texted about something about 103-degree temperature. That doesn't sound good.
No, not at all.
Pardon me for stating the obvious there. Wow. But, I mean, nonetheless, I certainly hope Andy's feeling better.
Hard-hitting analysis by...
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, Josh, how is lockout life going? I mean, how does this affect your job? I mean, as a beat writer, is it like one would presume it's a big kick in the head in a bad way? You know what I mean? Is that the way it's working out?
My boss has asked me if I could cover the Pirates game on Saturday night, so there's an answer for you. But
oh, Lord. Oh, man, are you going to do it? Are you going to do it?
Oh, yeah, I said I would. I mean, come on. I don't say no to the bosses too often. I mean, whatever. But they might clinch loss number 82 that night, so at least it'll be easy to write about. But, you know, it's funny. The players are still available every day for me to speak with and do articles. And so in some ways, it's kind of like life as usual. You know, they're at South Point every day. There's, you know, about 12 to 15 guys. So from that standpoint, you know, I can still churn out some articles here and there. But, you know, it's just bad for everyone on a lot of levels. It just, you know, the lockout in 2004 was so necessary because there were so many, you know, things that were altered that really made the game better with the salary cap and things like that. But this one's just stupid and really embarrassing, quite honestly. And it's just, I think it will be resolved long before, you know, the season is lost. But it's just, honestly, it's bad for everybody involved. I don't like it at all. And, you know, deep down, aside from my professional work, I'm a hockey fan just like you guys are, and I love watching the game, and I hate when anything makes the game look bad, and that's exactly what's happening right now.
Yeah, when you say it's bad for everybody, I mean, it's bad for everybody. It's bad for the economy just in Pittsburgh and all the other NHL cities, too, because night in and night out, people are flooding these arenas and eating at restaurants all around, drinking at the bars and stuff like that,
yeah.
Too. So these guys are going to be taking hits.
I hate to sound like a sap here, but I know so many people who work at console. I know ushers, I know, you know, bartenders, you name it down there. People who, you know, that's their second job, and they really need that money.
Yeah.
And I know nobody thinks about that kind of stuff, but, you know, I'm not going to feel so bad for the players who theoretically have six or seven figures in the bank, but, I mean, there's literally dozens or hundreds of people who really rely on that income from those games. And so, yeah, the digger you deep, the uglier the whole situation gets, and you just hope things get resolved as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine about that the other day. And, I mean, I guess in Pittsburgh it's a little bit brighter than some other cities because I guess they're going to keep some of the employees around. Am I misreading that report?
Yeah, they're not letting anybody go right now. I mean, now if this goes on for quite some time, that could change. But for right now, nobody's losing their job. Nobody's seeing a pay cut, as far as I know. And, yeah, that's a great thing. Luckily, the Penguins are a lot more financially stable than they were even in 2004, quite honestly. And so that's a good thing. But there are teams around the league that are, you know, going to be forced to make cuts to personnel and all kinds of different jobs, really, because – you know, let's be honest, it's one of the NHL's problems. There's about 9 or 10 franchises that just hemorrhage money every year, and those particular franchises, you know, the people who work for them are in a lot of trouble right now.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, there's a lot of money being talked about here, and it's funny because the players aren't getting paid, the people working at the arenas aren't getting paid, but the NHL owners, many of these guys are still getting, like, tax breaks on their arenas and stuff like that because they're tax-funded. And they're still getting these breaks on those things, and it's really not fair. James from Slewfooters had a really good article earlier today. I would highly recommend checking that out. And talking about that whole tax break thing, you know, and the Pens are one of those teams, I think, that get a tax break. Am I right, Josh?
Yes.
Or some kind of break there with the taxes, because it's a tax kind of paid by taxpayers.
Well, this might be hitting Ron Burkle hard in the wallet. I think he needs every chance he can get to save a buck here or there. I'm just kidding. it's like, yeah, NHL owners, you know what's funny? I'm changing the subject a little bit here, but it seems to me that most of the fans I gauge from are very much pro-player in this current situation, and usually it's not like that in labor stoppages. Usually you think, oh, they're greedy millionaires. But everyone's so pro-player, and I mean, I can see it from both sides, but the owners have come across as just so arrogant and slimy. I mean, the NHLPA has done such a good public relations job, and the owners in the league, like, every chance they get, they step on their foot. Like, all the contracts they gave out right before the lockout, and you can go on. And nothing these guys do makes any sense. They just are casting themselves to be even bigger villains than some of them already are. So, and it is kind of funny that they're getting breaks in the situation, and some of their employees are probably hurting for money. And honestly, you know, even the hockey players, yeah, they make a lot of money, but I feel bad for a guy like Derek Engeland, for instance. Now, this guy signed like a three-year deal for like $600,000 a year. That's to you and me, that's a ton of money. But really, if you look at, you know, the course of a man's life, that's not enough to, you know, necessarily, you know, say, okay, I'm set for life after these 3 years. But you got to remember, these guys live different lifestyles. Like when you're a professional hockey player and you see, you know, all your teammates are driving a Lexus or whatever, you know, you're not going to show up to work in a Honda Civic. You know what I mean? And so for a guy like that, that might be his only big contract, and he might lose one of those 3 years. So, I mean, there are people to, you know, feel a little bit of sympathy for this. So it's really top to bottom in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Ben Lovejoy's one of those guys. You know, Craig Adams. I mean, yeah. It's
Joe Vitale, yeah. I mean, and I feel bad for some of the young guys involved in this. I assure you, there are some young guys in the Penguins locker room and around the league who want nothing to do with this situation, and they'd be willing to play under the current, you know, owner's proposal. It's really a lot of the older guys that are more the hardline union guys who have been through this from 2004.
Yeah. Well, it's also robbing us of potentially Tame Solani's last year, also Jagr's possible last year. And I mean, come on.
Broder's maybe his last year.
Yeah.
Me too.
Absolutely. Broder
has so many alimony payments. I think he's going to play until he's 50 probably, but God bless him anyway. He's one of my favorites. But no, you know what? I actually,
Uncle Daddy.
I was talking with somebody weeks ago about, like, you know, every time there's a lockout or you miss a season, there's going to be guys who retire. And yeah, I mean, Tabo is one of the greatest guys ever. And you mentioned Jagr down in Dallas. I mean, I was at South Point the other day, and guess who I ran into? None other than the legendary Cy Clark. And, you know, Cy told me he was all ready to take a trip to Dallas to go taunt Yags one last time. And I certainly don't want to miss that.
No, not at all. That's incredible. Cy's a great man.
Yeah, he's looking well, I might add.
He's looking a lot better.
Yeah, he's healthy. He's ready for the season to get going. You can tell. He doesn't want any of this lockout stuff. He is in mid-season form, let me tell you.
I mean, it's. I just can't believe that this is actually happening again. I did not, you know, with all of the growth that the NHL has made financially over the last 3 to 4 years, and it being in a position to where it can kind of like slowly creep into, you know, hardcore fans of other sports and make them casual fans of the NHL, it just gets shut down right away. It's just insane to me. We're dealing with this again.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of people who will tell you the NHL will always be, you know, the fourth of the major, you know, leagues in America and all this. But you know what? I don't always buy into that. And I think the league has really made a ton of progress in the last few years. And they had great ratings for the two Penguins-Detroit series. And the Philly-Chicago series the next year was even better, the ratings. And that wasn't so much because of the markets. That was because of the Olympics and the way the league was getting bigger and bigger. The game's getting more popular. But when you do this, I mean, like you said, it's mind-boggling. You know, at the same time, you almost expect it because you look at the history of the league and this happens, unfortunately, a couple of times every decade. And you lose fans every time it happens. I hear people say, oh, everybody's going to come back. And yeah, of course most people will, certainly in Pittsburgh because there's such a great product here. But no, there are going to be fans around the league lost, I promise you. And there were so many markets last year were not traditional hockey markets that had great seasons, or Phoenix, Miami, places like that. They're going to lose fans. I guarantee you they will because of this. And it's, you know, it's going to end up, you know, probably 50-50, splitting up the revenue when this is all said and done. And everybody knows it now. And for as long as they let it play out, it's just, it's sad. It really is. It's really a black eye for the sport.
Yeah, it's definitely one step forward, two steps back every time you have a lockout. And Penn's prospect Joe Morrow tweeted, and he made that infamous tweet about Bettman needing to get another job a couple of weeks ago. And it kind of struck me as kind of funny because here's a 19-year-old kid who's lived through three lockouts now under Gary Bettman already. And it's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing that this is such a routine. Every 6 years, there's a lockout, it seems, and it's
getting old. Yeah, well, I'd like to thank Joe Morrow for doing that because that gave me an easy article on a Sunday morning. Wasn't expecting that. The only time in the last year I've written Sunday morning articles where I think that and James Neal's contract extension. I don't know why I remember that, but it was in my Buffalo hotel room on Sunday morning. And Joe quickly retracted, of course, and removed that from his Twitter site, and I actually spoke with Joe, and he clearly meant what he said, but at the same time, I think he thought, uh-oh, I probably shouldn't have done that, you know. But you know what? He was saying what a lot of people were thinking. And
absolutely.
To me, Gary Bettman's a really polarizing guy because if you do the research on regarding when the Penguins were close to leaving town about 6 years ago, he did a lot of good things for the city of Pittsburgh. He really did. I mean, he stood up for the Penguins and for Pittsburgh and really did help keep the Penguins here. And people don't want to acknowledge that, but it's true. I mean, he really did. He did not want to lose this market, and he did a lot of good things for the city. But at the same time, he's just such a villain, and he just, you know, he just acts in such of an arrogant way at times that it's really distasteful, I think, to a lot of people. And again, you know, every time he speaks at a press conference or says something, you just like cringe because you know he's going to say something that's going to anger fans. And the thing about Bettman, he is a smart man. I mean, he knows better. But you know, sometimes he just can't help.
Oh yeah. He's making $8 million a year.
Yeah, he certainly is. And that's the problem. You know what, guys? What I've been saying about this labor dispute, and labor disputes are always about the issues, whether it be salary cap or money or whatever. And yeah, we have those components. But really, it's about Donald Fehr and his legacy and Gary Bettman and his legacy and neither guy wanting to lose to the other one. That's what's so sad about this to me. You've just got two egos going at it, and there's a lot more at stake than those two guys.
Yeah, it's absolutely ego-driven, and here you have potential, like, to really fix the game in a lot of ways with headshots and just the way they ref the game anymore and how tight it's got. Like, you have a chance to really open it back up a bit again and eliminate some of these headshots and deal with this anew. But here it is with Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr with just these two massive egos colliding. And the real loser, besides the fans, I think is the city of Columbus in this. If they lose the season, they're making absolutely zero cash already, and they lose an all-star game as well. I mean,
that's a very good point. Go ahead. Okay, sorry about that. I mean, not to mention the fact that Columbus is in a situation where their arena lease is running out in the next few years. It's not – they are by no means tied to that city. When you have – Kansas City with an arena like they have, Seattle with an up-and-coming arena, and they're willing to throw a lot of money to get back in the NHL rank, and still Quebec City. I mean, you've got three viable markets for relocation at all times. If you do Seattle, you don't have to move their conference, them in a conference.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, the way the NHL landscape is, no matter what happens in this situation, teams are going to be different in a couple of years. I'm telling you right now, Quebec City is going to get a team. And I really am starting to think Seattle is also. I know Kansas City wants one. They have a beautiful arena. I got to go there for a preseason game last year with the Penguins. It's a great place. But, listen, Phoenix isn't going to be there much longer. And there's a couple of other teams, whether it be Florida, Columbus. Things are about to change. And it always happens in the NHL once every 10 years or so. So, that will be interesting to keep track of. But it's just, Columbus, I feel bad for them. You know, they're trying there. They really are. But when you lose an all-star game, that's not such a big deal to a city like Pittsburgh to have an all-star game now. To a city like Columbus, it's huge. And they're one of those seven or eight teams I mentioned that really can't afford something like this. And yet it's happening anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I can even say
Josh, first here from being somebody that lives right smack in the middle of Columbus. You go anywhere in this city and you've got an all-star game decal on everything. They've got a huge banner. I flew out of the airport here recently. When you walk in to check your bags, there is a enormous all-star game panel up on the wall by the escalator. It's huge. I mean, it's around the city everywhere. This is just going to kill casual hockey fans in the city.
Oh, for sure it is. And, you know, Columbus is a city that really, I think, made a lot of sense for the NHL. It's a growing city. It's kind of a lot of young vibrancy to it. I still think it can work there. But you lose something like this, I'm telling you, sometimes you're just done when this happens. You need to get some momentum and capitalize on it. And where they are as a franchise right now, just in terms of their on-ice product, isn't going to help fill the seats. And this lockout could be catastrophic for that franchise. It really could. And the NHL, you know, like I always say, guys, hockey is the greatest game of them all. But the NHL is not the greatest league of them all. That's really how I've always felt. And nothing that's happened this summer has led me to think otherwise. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's a very true statement.
Josh, what do you think the lockout kind of does for developing prospects like Joe Morrow, Scott Harrington, Simone Dupre, Bo Bennett, guys like that?
Well,
they probably
wouldn't
get a shot anyways, but...
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that Joe Morrow was mouthing off about this because it's not a bad thing for him at all. The quality of play in the AHL is going to be unbelievable at the beginning of this season. It really is. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And it's good for a guy like him, let me tell you, to go get that kind of experience against really great players. I think, like, Edmonton sending its entire team to the AHL, which is going to be, like, unbelievably talented players. And yeah, it's not a bad thing at all. And you know what? They're going to get to work with coaches more, and just a lot of good things are going to happen because of that for these guys. It's perfect. Even Tangrady. Like, I know Tangrady feels like he's ready to play in the NHL, and he probably is to some extent. But, you know, it's nothing wrong with him playing a month or two down there and getting even better. And so from that standpoint, really, it's a good thing from a developmental standpoint, absolutely. And it'll make watching the Wilkes-Barre games a little more fun, I would think, for the rest of us. It's a lot of talent going to be there.
Absolutely. It trickles all the way down even through Wheeling. You get players that probably wouldn't be spending a lot of time down here for that extended amount of time now. And now you have a new ownership group here in Wheeling, and now you have bigger stars down here to kind of market your team. I think that it's great for everybody but the NHL in a way and all the other markets just because of that fact. You know, like you get these guys like a Tangrady play a couple more months down in Wilkes-Barre and then bump down a Samuelson or someone that you could showcase down in Wheeling. And it's kind of a win-win for those cities, but it's overall, like, if you had to give or take, it's still a raw deal in the whole thing.
Oh, no question. You mentioned Wheeling, and I've actually never been to a game in Wheeling, but I've decided that's going to change at some point in October or November. I would like to make my Nailers debut. Perhaps we can organize a trip and get a bunch of people together and even make our way to Wheeling Island later for some festivities. I really think this could happen.
We could totally make that happen in Penn Nation. Ken, we'll bring a trumpet and we'll get kicked out again.
Sure.
Just saying.
I'm all in on this.
Yeah.
Right. I co-sign all of this.
All right. We
actually,
clearly
it's not a bad deal. It's like $8. You get a great seat. Like, there's not a bad seat in the house there. Everything's really close. And it's just good old-fashioned hockey.
Well, there's some interesting minor league happenings going on. The Johnstown Tomahawks open play Saturday night. And none other than Mario Lemieux dropping out the first puck. The War Memorial, that should be quite a sight.
Wow.
And
that's huge.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about making my way up to Erie in a couple of weeks. I think it's October 6th when the London Knights come to town with Scott Harrington and Ole Mata. That might be fun. Just throwing some ideas out there, guys, you know.
There's actually a really good minor league team in the city. See them. Sorry.
You mean Columbus?
Yeah, I was going to make a dig about Columbus being a minor league team. You know, but they're still locked out.
Close to accurate. Oh, man. It's come to this. It really
I mean, I understand.
When you miss watching Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, guys. I sit in South Point every day and I try to think of something to write about, and it's just not happening. I mean, I don't know what to do anymore. It's, and by the way, there's like no fans coming to this, which is very interesting to me. We get maybe like 10 fans there every day. It's totally open to the public. It's like Sidney Crosby by, you know, 10 of his teammates, like signing autographs in the parking lot afterwards.
Yeah.
Very few people are coming.
Well, now that you say that, now everyone's going to want to go.
Yeah, I don't want Sid to get like tortured in the parking lot tomorrow, but the whole thing's just been kind of surreal. So, you know, a few fans and most of the Penguins are like going through their drills.
Mostly reporters too. Yeah.
What's that?
I mean, there are more reporters almost than fans in the stands, which is
Really. I mean, there aren't really that many of us there. Luckily, the TV channels haven't been showing up that much. We hate it when they show up because they try to like act like they run the place, you know. But oh god, it's awful. But it's a weird time for the players. It really is.
Josh, you mentioned something on Twitter last night. There's some fan, speaking of the fans, because we were just talking about the South Point stuff, but you're mentioning some fan thing at console Saturday.
Yeah, okay. So this thing's been circulating on Twitter and Facebook a lot in the last couple of days, a fan rally at console. I'll tell you what I know. There's a couple of fans, I guess, have tried to get this thing going. It's 1 o'clock at console. Now, I can't really tell you any more than that because the people who are running this thing said that a lot of players, including Sid, were going to be there speaking to the crowd. And I spoke with Sid and a lot of the other players, and they all said that was absolutely not true. And Sid's not even going to be in town this weekend. So I can't guarantee that any players are going to be there. In fact, I'm under the impression that they aren't. That's what most of them told me. So
they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, so before you head down to console expecting to meet Sidney Crosby or something on Saturday, I will warn you, I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm not trying to extinguish the fan's flame here. If you want to come, you know, protest, be my guest. You're an American, that's your right. But I don't know how many people are going to be there at all. I don't believe any of the Penguins are. That's basically what I was told after their workout today. So just throwing it out there for you.
Yeah, and that seems so not like them, you know, in a sense, like professional athletes really don't involve themselves in fan rallies often, you know. So if you kind of buy into that, it's kind of weird.
I mean, I know fans kind of like to make themselves a part of these things, and most of the fans are getting screwed out of a lot here, but this isn't really about the fans, this dispute. It's between, you know, the owners and the players, and I just think the players feel like, you know, what do you want them to do? Get up and say Gary Bettman sucks or something? I know that's what the fans want, but that's not really going to help their cause any. So I think they're just kind of – yeah, right. I mean, so I think they're just going to kind of stay quiet, and I can't say that I don't blame them. Hey, before I forget, guys, I think speaking of road trips, I think we might have to head up to Montreal for these games that are being played next week that Talbot's organized. As I've often said, Montreal is just like the greatest city ever to visit, and I have a feeling there could be some serious shenanigans with Max running the show there.
I'm all for this as well. I like this idea.
Co-sign. Josh, what's the stop? Like, okay, we've had 3 lockouts now in, what, 19 years? What's the stop another league like the KHL or another league from resurfacing or surfacing to kind of overtake this lockout? Because there are agreements that the players could obviously play in the KHL while they're locked out. If they're locked out for an extended amount of time, wouldn't fan loyalty start to kind of shift? Would you think that would be the case?
Well, it would have to be a North American league, I think. But, you know, the KHL, for instance, it is a threat to the NHL in that, you know, the more lockouts we see, I wouldn't be shocked if a lot of Russian players just decide to play permanently there. And they really do like playing there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we might not think as much of the KHL as we do the NHL for a lot of reasons, but that's home to them. That's home to Evgeny Malkin and Dallas Ovechkin. So,
and it's tax-free.
Yes, it is. And that's exactly why Yager played there, of course. All that tax-free money. And it is a concern. You're going to lose a lot of, well, I mean, gambling issues too. But, I mean, you're going to lose a lot of European players if this keeps happening. I'm telling you that they're just as comfortable there as they are here. If they can play there, get the same amount of money and not be locked out, you're going to lose some of them, and you don't want to do that. So many of them are great players. It's just the way it is.
All right, that will do it for the live portion of our show tonight. We've got about 10 seconds left. We'll probably head into overtime here just for a little bit, but for Joe Depto, for Josh Yoey, I'm Nick Richter. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Penn Nation Radio Show. Take us out, Cy. Cy Clark there, the Asian sensation. It's amazing.
It's sweeping the nation.
Josh, this sucks.
What's that?
This is like the absolute worst, by the way.
Oh,
like this lockout just is horrible.
Torture. Are we off the air?
Yeah, but we're still recording, but we're just not live right now.
Oh,
so,
I got you.
Yeah. So this will be
really
on the podcast
miserable.
Version. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's really a dark time. I have to go to PNC Park Saturday night, for God's sake. I mean, it's just like, I don't mind doing it, really. I kid, but, it, you know, yeah, that's
well,
true.
What's more depressing, actually, at this moment, the lockout or the Buccos?
Well, I think
jeez.
The Buccos, as depressing as it is, there's still an element of humor there to see them. Like, totally become the Bucs again, right? But the lockout, there's just nothing funny about it, really. Whereas, like, the Pirates, you can kind of, like, I was watching the game last night, and they committed, like, 3 errors in a row. And I kind of chuckled. It's like, you know, there is something kind of funny about that. The situation is just so awful.
I think it's just that we're all numb to the fact that it's just perpetual losing every year.
Yeah, I mean, how old are you guys?
I'm 33.
We're about the same age. I mean, it's been a long time. It's, you know, I'm 32. It was 12 last time they were in the playoffs. I mean,
yeah.
That's a generation. I mean, you just... just doesn't matter anymore. It really, they hate to say it, but like as exciting as it was when they were winning, the second they start losing, you just kind of just shrug your shoulders and it's what you expect and just carry on. It's not a pretty thing. Whereas the lockout is just, you know there's a great product there and the Penguins have a really talented team and, you know, we get this.
Yeah, and it's a shame because here we have the best player in the world and he's sitting on, like, in South Point playing this practices and scrimmages right now. This is stupid. Get your head out of your butt and do something here. You have a great market. Oh, it's lame.
The whole thing, at least the one in 2004 was kind of necessary for financial reasons. I mean, they really did need a salary cap. So as much
and
as
they had a lot of stuff to fix, too.
Yeah, and the game, like, the next season was just so great because, I mean, the game was so exciting that it was Crosby and Ovechkin's rookie years and scoring was way up and the salary cap was kind of neat for everyone to, you know, kind of play GM at home. I mean, you had a lot of things going on, but this one's just awful.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a more pointless reason to have a lockout than this one.
Yeah, you just want to, like, take everyone involved and just shake them until they stop.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely do you think it is that we see hockey again this year?
10 being likely and 1 being not likely?
Yeah.
I'm going to call it a 7. I still, if the season were totally lost, I wouldn't be shocked, I guess, but I'd be very surprised. I think the people in charge might be arrogant and stubborn and stupid, whatever you want to call them, but I think even they realize that can't happen. So everybody I've talked with, all the players I've talked with, and I've talked with agents, people with the league, nobody thinks the season's going to be wiped out. I mean, there's not one person that thinks that. But most people I've talked with, the consensus is maybe around Thanksgiving, something like that. They think there's going to be hockey again, and I tend to agree with that because this is about money, yeah, and that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But there aren't, like, fundamental changes here, like the last one with salary cap and everything. So it can't be that hard.
Yeah. And ironically, that's when NBC's contract kicks in. That's when they start showing games, too. So you miss the first couple weeks, month of the year. It's no big deal.
Doesn't show the league, right.
No. Nah. So I think the one guy that might say that they do see the league being locked out for a year, it would be agent Alan Walsh. Like, that guy just seems to be so apocalyptic about everything.
Well,
right now
we need to have like some kind of documentary or miniseries done simply on Alan Walsh's tweets. I mean, this is some serious entertainment. Did you happen to see what he said to the Florida Panthers president a couple weeks ago? It was
no.
The night the lockout kicked in, the Panthers president he's kind of a goofball. Anyway, I forget his name. He tweeted that he's eating his favorite treat right now, cherry yogurt, something like that. And like 30 seconds later, Walsh writes, "Did you seriously just write that? Don't you know the lockout's in 3 hours?" I'm like, oh, my God. This is great.
I need to start refollowing this guy again.
And like, I've dealt with Alan, and he's actually a friendly guy to deal with. And some of his clients are, like, my favorite people ever, from Mike Rupp to Pascal Dupuy to Marc-Andre Fleury. I love all of his clients, but if I were them, I might be tempted to say, hey, Alan, could you, like, tone it down a little bit maybe? But, you know, there's no toning that guy down. He's just on fire.
Yeah, he and Joe Depto are huge, huge amigos. They go to Bruce Springsteen concerts all the time and stuff together.
Wow.
Right?
Oh, yeah, BFF.
I did not know that, actually. Well, Rob Rossi never misses a Bruce Springsteen concert. So maybe there's, like, a little click there that I wasn't aware of. That's interesting.
Rossi's going to invite Depto to the next Christmas party. I'm banking on it.
He might. Yeah,
I'd like
Christmas party last year, I'm not going to lie, it got a little out of control. And I would expect...
That's why
I would expect the same thing a lot. Now, you may recall the best part of last year's Christmas party was that Ike Taylor was there. Which is...
Was he delivering very mediocre hip-hop songs?
Well, I don't know. He was just like sitting there in the corner, had like one drink and left. But, you know, he does a radio show for the Trib, like, I think it's on Tuesdays, maybe. So he's kind of, you know, part of the Trib family, if you will. So he was invited, and he actually did show up, which was cool. But he had, like, all these weird things going on at the Christmas party. Then in the corner, there's Ike Taylor, like, drinking a screwdriver by himself. It was really surreal, and I liked it. I mean, you had to laugh. How could you not? Maybe the Trib Christmas party is why he got burned so bad a couple weeks later in Denver. Maybe he was still thrown off from the experience. I don't know.
He was mentally disturbed by people trying to kiss other people. So.
Yeah, Rossi was feeling a lot of love that night. I'm not going to lie. I mean, he really was. He was.
I wasn't going to name any names, Josh.
Well, you know, I'm the kind of guy that names names, so it's all right.
We like that about you.
Yeah. You just tell it how it is, man.
Oh, God. We haven't heard about Mike Richards tonight, which reminds me, I mentioned Cy Clark earlier. Saw him at Southfield the other day. He talked about his hatred for Mike Richards for a good 10 minutes, just for no particular reason. It was great. So I just started talking about Mike Richards as only
he needed
him.
A vent. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't at full capability last year, so now he's got to make up for lost time.
I think you're right.
I can't blame him.
Even when Cy was really sick last year, by the way, he made the trip to Los Angeles specifically to taunt Mike Richards. And he was on my plane back to Pittsburgh the next day. And there's nothing like a 4-hour plane ride with Cy, by the way. he was in good form. What a guy.
Oh, man. I can only imagine.
I'm very jealous of you.
Well, we have a...
Yeah, I love your life.
What's that?
I love your life.
Well,
you just have
the
life.
I have the most interesting relationship with the fans. I mean, I had a missed call yesterday on my cell phone, and I looked to see who it was, and damn if it wasn't from the knitting lady. So, I mean, you know, me and the knitting lady keep track even during the off season. Speaking of the knitting lady, my favorite moment of last year was, there was a nationally televised game against the Rangers pretty late. It was in April, and my birthday is April 2nd, and this was a couple of days later. And the knitting lady had a big sign that said, "Happy birthday, Josh Yeo," and she held it right behind Torts the whole game. I'm thinking, I've been like, Torts doesn't even know who I am, but he just hates me now. Like, oh, my God. I kept getting calls all night, like, the knitting lady has a crutch on you. I'm like, oh, stop it, you know.
Well, didn't she also, like, yell at you out on the street one night? Like, you were leaving the arena at, like, 1:30 in the morning?
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you that story.
Did you hear Josh?
It was the night of Mario's statue unveiling, which was actually in the morning before a game. And it was against Toronto.
Yeah.
That night, I was leaving the arena, and knitting lady and her husband were in a car right by the statue, and they were kind of waiting for me, I guess. And I ended up like posing for a picture with knitting lady, and we ended up. She's not a very nice woman. She's very long-winded.
Yeah.
So we ended up like talking for an hour or something until like 2 a.m. after the game, and the next morning
Holy
to practice. Next morning at practice, Disco Dan Bileswa comes up to me and says, "Hey, saw you holding court with Knitting Lady last night by the statue. Like, oh my God. I mean, it's a small town, you know?
Pittsburgh has some very eccentric fans. Like, I don't know if I've ever looked around, besides maybe Vancouver, I don't know if I've ever seen so many people that are so eccentric. I mean, you have Psy. I mean, it all kind of started with Psy, I think. But you start to get this notoriety and this popularity, and then you have Knitting Lady, who's now this icon, so to speak. And last year you had the Bears in the playoffs, and then you had these guys that dressed like LMFAO.
Right. And don't forget that the guy that's the legendary vendor, by the way.
Yeah.
Of course, Cotton Candy Man left us too early, but he was certainly a part of it as well. Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting, this fan base. I have to say, there are some very eccentric characters, and there's also some characters that have some serious financial backup. Because I always notice, like, I'm always like, Knitting Lady, you're in the front row every game. She's not a season ticket holder. Like, I don't know how she gets the tickets, and she's never really told me completely. And Psy has, like, 30 jerseys he brings to every game with, you know, vulgar things on the back of them and stuff. Man. Well-financed stuff. They're not just eccentric. They're well-financed. It's a good combination.
Yeah. That's amazing.
They're great, though. It's like a carnival atmosphere down at the arena, which you have to like.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was going to say. Like, and I don't even mind it. Like, I think, I don't know, a lot of fan bases would be like, okay, get the heck out of here, you know, with that stuff, this clown stuff. But I think for some reason that just fits in Pittsburgh. Like, it's just a city built on character, and here you have a bunch of those kind of characters in the stands heckling and just cheering and jeering as loud as they can. I love
it. Well, and let's be honest, here in Pittsburgh, we kind of like our fans to be part of the show. I mean, let's be honest. It's just, if you go to a Steeler game, the fans, like, when they play Renegade, they feel like they're part of the game and they're part of the show, and they just do. And I mean, maybe every city's like that a little bit, but, I mean, it makes the in-game experience that much more fun, I think. I really love the fans there. And listen, people have sold out the place for 5 years in a row, so they can dress whatever they want or knit if they want. I don't think anybody minds.
Yeah, and when you have professional athletes taunting you, doing the Hulk Hogan salute back at you, having Hulk Hogan film like a little thing taunting Pittsburgh fans, I mean, come on, you know you've made it.
That's right. Oh, I totally agree. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And that was a surreal spring when Hulk Hogan got involved, I might add.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. It's
kind of
ripped
apart.
And Psy has become, like, honestly, he might be more well-known than some of the Penguins at this point. Psy is a famous man, and he brings the intensity every night. I give him credit.
You see him more at games than Dustin Jeffrey.
What's that?
Oh, that's cold.
You see him more at games than Dustin Jeffrey.
Well, probably, but, you know, we like Dustin. He's a nice man.
Yeah.
You know Dustin Jeffrey is? Dustin Jeffrey's the guy who, like, needs to go play in Columbus like Letestu did.
Yeah, he would do
well.
He needs
to go to a bad team and go play. You know what I mean? He's in a strong situation here.
Absolutely. Well, Josh, thanks for joining us tonight. We're about out of time. It's been long overdue. Hopefully we could have you on again here sometime soon.
Yeah. Oh, guys, I'm so bored right now. Have me on anytime you want. I'd be honored.
All right, and we'll make that wheeling trip happen, all right?
Oh, in all seriousness, let's do it. Penns Nation, I know all you're right. Listening. Let's go to Wheeling and party. Why not?
Yeah, and if you need a place to crash, Depto's parents live in town, so.
I like it.
That's true. I feel like we could do like a Howard Dean thing right now. We're coming to Erie.
We're going to Wheeling.
Yeah, you know when John sounds involved, it's been a long night.
All right, Josh. Well, thanks.
All right, guys.
That's
take care.
Do it for the show tonight. All right. For Josh, for Depto, Nick, we'll catch you guys later. Peace.
Good night.
See ya. PG8 Sports Nation.